This is VOA's International Edition. Coming up, a massive deadly explosion rocks a major port city in northern China. No let-up in the influx of migrants to Greece from the Middle East. A political candidate's voice may improve chances for victory.
We are, like other animals, influenced by very subtle cues, nonverbal audio cues that are biologically determined.
A country western singer finds his voice after losing it. These stories are more just ahead. I'm Ray Kugel. A massive blast in the northern Chinese port city of Tianjin Wednesday killed more than a dozen people and injured several hundred others when a shipment of explosives blew up at a warehouse. State-run media said two explosions within 30 seconds of each other were so strong they registered at a nearby earthquake monitoring station. I spoke with VOA's Bill Ide, who is near the site of the explosion, and described what happened.
Well, we've just arrived near the scene of the blast site. We can see smoke still billowing into the air. It's still about a couple kilometers from where I'm standing right now. I'm standing next to some massive apartment complexes, and pretty much all of the windows have been blown out in these apartment complexes. There's also a massive exhibition hall, which is nearby, and huge steel doors with glass in them have been blown out. You really, when you stand here, you really get a sense of just how powerful this explosion was. And as we were coming in towards where I am now, even further away, 5, 6, 7 kilometers, we were seeing blown out windows along the streets everywhere.
Are there any reports locally on what the cause might be?
Right now, what we are hearing from state media is that there were hazardous materials at this warehouse. There have also been reports that suggest a fire had started before the explosion occurred. And actually, there were two explosions. One, an initial explosion, and the second, the massive explosion that has been reported here to be as much as 21 tons of TNT. So at this point, it's some kind of warehouse for hazardous materials that had a fire. There was an explosion that occurred, but not a lot of other detail yet at this point.
How is the Chinese media covering this event?
Well, the Chinese state media has been covering, as they do in other incidents like this, there's been a lot of focus more on the rescue effort and trying to save those who have been injured, focusing on how the public is reaching out to others to give their support, which obviously happens in any kind of an incident like this. But typically, the Chinese state media coverage is kind of tilted in that direction, and it's a lot slower at getting to bigger questions of, you know, how did this all happen? Why did it happen? Was it an accident? Who might be responsible? Details like that come much, much slower.
VOA's Bill Ide near the warehouse explosion in Tianjin, China. People who witnessed the explosion posted pictures and videos on Chinese social media outlets showing massive plumes of fire and smoke that dwarfed nearby high-rise buildings. The videos also depict an enormous shockwave that rattled buildings several kilometers from the blast site. Tianjin is about 150 kilometers southeast of Beijing. It is China's fourth largest city. Time now to check out what's trending on social media. International Edition's G. Abby Lee is in the studio to tell us what people are tweeting about the explosion in China. Hello, G.
Hi, Ray. Let's start with a Chinese state-run news outlet, Xinhua News Agency. It's on Twitter at XH News. It tweeted the breaking news earlier Wednesday, and the tweet reads like this. Hashtag breaking. Massive explosion rocks northern China's hashtag Tianjin, causing casualties unclear yet. That tweet got retweeted more than 2,300 times. Xinhua News has been very active on Twitter Wednesday, updating the news almost every hour since breaking the news. It later tweeted the explosion was reportedly caused by explosives at a container terminal.
Any word on casualties or what the speculation is, G?
For now, what I can tell you is that the numbers are going to go up. For instance, when Xinhua News first tweeted about the casualties, it said a nearby hospital received more than 50 wounded from the blast. For our Chinese-speaking listeners, Weibo, which is China's answer to Twitter, can be another source of information. Weibo users are actively sharing pictures of the damage to their homes and workplaces from Wednesday's accident. Ray?
Okay, G, thanks a lot for the announcement. Social media reporter G. Abby Lee. You can follow her on Twitter at G. Abby Lee. That's spelled J-E-E-A-B-B-E-Y-L-E-E. And you can also comment on our website at www.voanews.com. This is VOA.
The news never stops, so keep current on your mobile device with VOA News. Just go to m.voanews.com/English for instant, up-to-the-minute news and entertainment. Check m.voanews.com/English on your handheld device for news as it happens. Stay connected with a fast-changing world with m.voanews.com/English.
Jazz America.
This is Russ Davis, and on my program Jazz America, I carry on the tradition begun decades ago by the great Willis Conover by exploring the wonders of a century of jazz history. I'll cover it all from Dixieland to swing to bebop to modal, free jazz, fusion, world jazz, contemporary, and beyond. Plus, you'll hear the words of the artists themselves as they tell their incredible stories. Join me for Jazz America, Saturdays and Sundays at 13 hours Universal Time, online at voanews.com and the Voice of America.
You're listening to VOA's International Edition. China allowed the value of its currency to drop again Wednesday, prompting a second consecutive decline in major stock markets around the world. A weaker currency could boost China's economic growth by making Chinese-made exports less expensive for foreign buyers. Investors may be worried that this intervention signals that growth in the world's second-largest economy is slowing more than they first thought. Nicholas Lardy is a senior fellow with the Peterson Institute for International Economics in Washington. He told International Edition's Jeffrey Young about the potential impact of China's revaluating its currency.
They're basically undertaking a process that will give a greater role to the market in determining the value of their currency. In the past, they've intervened to keep it from depreciating. The market pressure was pushing it down. They countervailed. They're now saying, we want to transition to a system in which the market has a greater role.
What is the advantage for China to do that?
Well, there are several advantages. The most important one is it gives them more flexibility in pursuing their domestic economic policies. If you have a currency, as they have had for quite some time, that's rigidly tied to the U.S., then you're much more constrained in what you can do on monetary policy. The second and very important advantage is that it is consistent with the advice that they have been getting from the IMF, and China's very anxious that their currency be included in something called the special drawing right of the IMF. This is kind of a good housekeeping seal of approval for a currency, which they think will help the RMB to become a reserve currency. So in part, they're doing this to help their domestic policy formulation. In part, they're doing it to meet international expectations in order to become a reserve currency.
Is this part of China's keeping with, we are a global power and we will explore every avenue of presenting that and proving that?
Yes, I think so. They've embarked a number of years ago on what they referred to as an internationalization of the RMB, having their currency used more in trade transactions, having it be held by central banks. They've entered into a number of more than 35 swap agreements with other central banks. These are mechanisms in which other central banks can borrow RMB from the dollar. So they're doing everything they can to increase the visibility of their currency and the use of their currency in trade transactions and increasingly now in international financial transactions.
By making the currency at least fractionally cheaper, does that make Chinese goods more attractive and therefore increase domestic production and jobs and activity?
Well, the amount they've moved the currency so far probably would have a very, very small effect. It's only moved 2-3 percentage points, and that won't have a big enough effect on prices to boost their economic growth in any measurable way. If the devaluation, the depreciation of the currency continued over a period of days and weeks, and it became a larger number, then at the margin it would help to increase their exports abroad and reduce their imports and thus contribute to economic growth. But we're a long way from that right now, and I don't think that's their primary motivation.
Nicholas Lardy is a senior fellow of the Peterson Institute for International Economics in Washington. He spoke with International Edition's Jeffrey Young. The influx of migrants from the Middle East to Greece continues, with about 100 to 500 landing on the Greek island of Kos every day, joining thousands already camped there. Greece is being overwhelmed by the wave of refugees and economic migrants, mostly from Syria, with more than 125,000 of them reaching the eastern Aegean islands this year, a 750% increase compared to 2014. In Brussels, European Commission spokeswoman Natasha Berthaud said the situation in Greece, particularly in Kos, is very serious, and the EU is working with several refugee agencies, primarily with its border management agency, to assist.
Of course, the other side of this coin is that responsibility and solidarity have to go hand in hand. So hotspot teams will be deployed to Greece to help process the large number of asylum applications with the assistance of our agencies, the European Asylum Support Office, Frontex, the border agency, Europol, and Eurojust. And of course, should Greece request further emergency funding in the field of asylum and migration, we also stand ready to assist.
Earlier this week, the EU approved national funding programs of $528 million. Greece was expected to get its first disbursement of more than $33 million quickly. In addition to funds, the EU also proposed a relocation system to transfer 16,000 people in need of international protection from Greece to other EU member states. Omar Mohammed is a 25-year-old Syrian migrant and English teacher.
40 people, it takes about 3 hours in the sea, in the Black Sea, big waves, something take us right, other times left. But finally, we are so glad to reach this coast, finally.
EU leaders pledged earlier this year to provide Europe's border management agency with additional assets to cope with the influx of people fleeing poverty and armed conflicts in the Middle East, Africa, and Asia. Omar Mohammed says he is glad to reach Europe after a harrowing journey.
I'm so happy to reach this coast. I've been trying for, you can say, for a month. The last 2 weeks, I've been sleeping in the streets, in the mosques, in the garden. I need to make a shower right now. But I missed my parents and my little family in Syria.
Tens of thousands of migrants have arrived in Europe by sea this year alone, mostly in Greece and Italy. Many have died in the attempt. Former U.S. President Jimmy Carter announced Wednesday that he has cancer, discovered during liver surgery earlier this month. Mr. Carter, who is 90, did not specify what type of cancer he has, saying only that it is in other parts of his body. He will undergo treatment at Emory Healthcare in the southern U.S. city of Atlanta, Georgia. Since leaving the White House in 1981, the former president has established the Carter Foundation and traveled the world working on issues like healthcare, global democracy, women and children's rights, as well as affordable housing. Mr. Carter recently finished a book tour to promote his latest book called A Full Life, Reflections at 90. He has written more than 20 books since leaving office. U.S. Democratic presidential candidate Hillary Clinton is turning over the private email server she used to send and receive messages during her tenure as U.S. Secretary of State to the Justice Department. Mrs. Clinton was pressured by Republican lawmakers to relinquish the server ever since it was revealed back in March that she used her personal email account to send official messages. Critics have accused her of trying to hide controversial communications in her private account, including those surrounding the deadly terrorist attack on the U.S. consulate in Benghazi, Libya, in 2012. Mrs. Clinton says she released more than 55,000 pages of emails to the State Department and authorized the agency to make them public. The FBI launched an investigation into the security of her private email server after the Inspector General of the U.S. Intelligence Community said he found at least 4 emails that were classified at the time they were sent, including 2 that were deemed to be top secret, the government's highest classification level. International Edition Susan Yaki spoke with VOA cyber correspondent Doug Bernard about the email controversy.
When she was Secretary of State, she did something a little unusual, which was rather than routing all her email traffic through State Department servers, she had a private one put in her Chappaqua home. And that was used both for her official correspondence as Secretary of State and also her personal correspondence. Well, when that revelation came out that she was doing that, there was a lot of concern that was raised, among other things. She could possibly be deleting official government correspondence. All of that has to be protected.
Yes, it's a law, actually, isn't it?
It's absolutely a law. And government officials are briefed on that. Also, you know, the security measures that she did or didn't put in place for this server. So this week she's turned over that private email server to federal authorities. And inspectors have announced, the Inspector General for the Intelligence Community announced that there were 4 emails that were classified that were found on those servers. 2 of them that were classified top secret, which is the highest, just about the highest level you can get. The controversy is whether they were actually classified at the time that they were sent or later reclassified, you know, after they had been sent.
She is running for president. How much of this is political and how much of it is actually an issue?
Right. We're in the season where everything is going to be seen through a political lens, and that's going to be true right up through next November and Election Day. But I think that this is a legitimate concern. Now, that doesn't mean that some won't try to politicize it, but the use of a private server outside of the normal sort of protections and bounds that the government creates or wraps its servers in, I think raises serious questions. And also that other question, if she's the one in control of the server, she's the one who can delete things, and she and her office has done that. And that, I think, raises genuine concern for citizens, for journalists. You know, what exactly was deleted? And, you know, well, now we just may never know.
VOA cyber correspondent Doug Bernard speaking with International Edition Susan Yaki. Coming up, a politician's voice may mean all the difference in winning. This is VOA.
Here's Science in a Minute.
A newly updated index of sunspot numbers over the last 400 years may have eliminated a key argument used by those who question human-caused climate change. Some of those who suggest that climate change is not anthropogenic in nature contend that changes in the sun's activity are responsible for any increase or decrease in global temperatures. The new sunspot index, called the Sunspot Number Version 2.0, shows that solar activity has been constant over the past few centuries without any noteworthy long-term upward trends in solar activity since 1700. Creators of the new Sunspot Index say this means that any rise in global temperatures since the beginning of the Industrial Revolution cannot be attributed to an increase in solar activity. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
This is VOA's International Edition. Here's a political story that's something out of the ordinary. Can the pitch of a politician's voice increase the chances of getting elected to office? 2 new studies suggest that candidates with lower pitch voices may have an edge. VOA's Jessica Berman explains.
Experience and more money to buy campaign ads increase a politician's chance of winning an election. But the pitch of a candidate's voice, how high or low they speak, may also boost their chance of victory. Take the 2008 election, for example, between Barack Obama and John McCain. McCain was a decorated war hero and had served in the U.S. Senate for more than 2 decades when he ran against Mr. Obama for President of the United States. At that point, Senator Obama had represented the state of Illinois in Congress for less than 4 years. In this presidential debate, they offered their vision of the future. First, Senator McCain.
I have the ability and the knowledge and the background to make the right judgments to keep this country safe and secure. These are major challenges to the United States of America. I don't think I need any on-the-job training.
Senator Obama's response.
We are going to invest in issues like education. We are going to invest in issues that relate to how ordinary people are able to live out their dreams. And that is something that I'm going to be committed to as President of the United States.
Mr. Obama, the less experienced candidate, went on to become president. One reason may have to do with the pitch of his voice, says Casey Klofstad, a political science professor at the University of Miami in Florida. Klofstad is not saying that Mr. Obama won only because he has a voice lower than McCain's, but in a study published in the journal PLOS ONE, researchers suggest that might have been an unconscious factor. Most of the 800 volunteers asked to listen to voices of non-politicians, altered by a computer to sound higher or lower, preferred the deeper pitch, associating it with strength, competence, and integrity. Klofstad also noted the volunteers in general also preferred candidates in their 40s and 50s, a point in their lives when people's voices are deepest.
We are not so different from the rest of the critters in the animal kingdom. We are, like other animals, influenced by very subtle cues, nonverbal audio cues that are biologically determined. And what we're trying to do in this research is to show that these subtle influences do have an impact on our decision-making and how we select our leaders.
Earlier work by Klofstad and colleagues found that candidates with deeper voices earned more votes. In the latest study, none of the voices belonged to candidates. But if you had to choose a person to vote for based on their voice, which one would you choose?
I urge you to vote for me this November. I urge you to vote for me this November.
If indeed unconscious bias toward voice pitch is a factor with the electorate, some candidates might want to consider voice coaching to lower their tone. Jessica Berman, VOA News, Washington.
Fans of the country group Little Big Town have something to cheer about. Singer Jimmy Westbrook is healthy and the group can resume touring. Westbrook had to undergo vocal cord surgery and the group had to cancel several dates this year. Also, Jana Kramer and her husband have announced they are expecting a baby. International Edition's David Byrd spoke with Country Hits USA host Nikki Strong about these latest happenings.
Good news for fans of the country vocal group Little Big Town. Jimmy Westbrook is back at full strength. Jimmy had been sidelined with some vocal trouble. Nikki, this guy was one of the lead singers, and he had to stop singing because he had some vocal problems, right?
Yep, just like so many artists are having problems, he was one of them. They figured, oh, you know, don't sing as much on tour. Just give your voice a rest. He went to the doctor. The doctor said, you need to have surgery now, otherwise you're not going to be able to do this.
And they had to cancel several concert dates. Millions of dollars.
Yes. Poof. And not only, they had to push back their tour to July, a July date, and then they had to push it back further because he wasn't totally healed. But the good news is he is healed now. He's been on Facebook talking, so it's great news. And, of course, the title of the tour is Painkiller, which I think is hilarious and ironic.
Yeah, well, the funny thing is, too, he went on Facebook and he was saying it okay,
yes.
I'm all better now.
Messing with folks.
It's kind of strange. Talking kind of like Mickey Mouse.
Yes.
Yeah.
That's
okay.
A joke.
I got a girl crush. Hate to admit it, but I got a heart rush. It's slowing down.
In other news from the country music world, Jenna Kramer is pregnant.
Yes.
Now, Jenna Kramer, for fans who don't know, I mean, you know her from her music, but you will remember a little while back, we talked about her and Brantley Gilbert.
Yes.
Were an item.
They were an item.
And then Brantley went back to Amber, his long-lost love.
Yes.
Who divorced her husband.
Yes.
Does this sound
like... To be with
like,
Brantley.
This sounds like we should be pouring alcoholic beverages.
Yes.
But to be with Brantley. And they got married. Now they're all happy ever after.
Mm-hmm.
And now Jenna Kramer, who is married to a football player.
Yes.
A big dude.
Yes.
So Mike is his name.
Yes.
She and he just announced that they are about to have a baby.
Yes. They recently got married. The baby is due early 2016. First-time parents for the both of them. They were married in May after being engaged for 6 months. They met on social media, on Twitter, in fact. He favorited some of her tweets. And she said, who is this guy? She did some research on him. They met, and bam!
Oh, my goodness. See?
She got the boy and the man.
See? Well, see, that's her song. That's her song,
yes,
I Got the Boy,
exactly.
Which is about Brantley Gilbert, is it not?
No, I don't think so.
There were rumors that maybe that was about Brantley because, you know, when he was young and immature and
yes,
hadn't worked out all his stuff,
mm-hmm,
he was with her.
Yes.
And now Amber, now
yes,
that he's grown, now Amber gets the man.
Yes, it's possible. I could see the connection.
Oh, country music dish. Well, you know, speaking of connection, you can connect with Nikki. She is at @VOA_music. You can also listen to her show, which is Country Hits USA. You can find that on our website, www.voanews.com.
And that'll do it for this edition of International Edition. You can get more news and information on our website at voanews.com. Thank you for joining us. I'm Ray Kugel in Washington. Enjoy the day.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
In China's Zhejiang province, authorities are carrying out a campaign to remove crosses from thousands of church roofs, spires, and archways. Under the purported justification of building code violations, more than 1,000 crosses have reportedly been toppled or stripped away over the past year and a half. In addition, since 2014, more than 400 churches have reportedly faced partial or total demolition by the government, claiming the buildings were illegal structures. The U.S. Commission on International Religious Freedom, an independent bipartisan federal commission, noted that many Christian believers in Zhejiang regard the campaign to remove the crosses and raise churches as directly targeting their religion. And they have not been silent about it. In July, Chinese Catholic officials described the dismantling of crosses on churches as an evil act. Christians took to the streets in protest in the southeastern city of Guangzhou. The Associated Press reported that in a rare move, China's semi-official Christian associations, which are supposed to ensure the ruling Communist Party's control over Protestant and Catholic groups, denounced the campaign against the crosses, claiming it risks alienating Christians from the government. Christians are not the only religious group targeted by officials in China. In its report, the U.S. Commission on International Religious Freedom noted that in the past year, there have been unprecedented violations against Uyghur Muslims, Tibetan Buddhists, and Falun Gong practitioners, in addition to Christians. Since 1999, the U.S. Secretary of State has designated China as a country of particular concern for severe violations of religious freedom. In its most recently published report, the State Department said that despite a constitutional guarantee that Chinese citizens enjoy freedom of religious belief, the government harassed, assaulted, detained, arrested, or sentenced to prison a number of religious adherents for activities reported to be related to their religious beliefs and practices. Secretary of State John Kerry has called freedom of religion a universal value ingrained in every human heart. He also pointed out that when countries undermine or attack religious freedom, they not only unjustly threaten those whom they target, they also threaten their country's own stability. The United States continues to call on all countries, including China, to live up to their international human rights commitments regarding religious freedom and allow their citizens the full exercise of this fundamental right and moral imperative.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.